Welcome back to Front Page on The Pulse, and we are delighted to have a lady who's going to teach us about bias. We think we know, but maybe we don't, Kerry, and being edumacated is always a good thing. Bronwyn Williams, who, as a bias specialist, welcome to our show.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Good morning, Bronwyn.
I was taken by your a little media release that came out. Your name was on it, talking about was bias relevant to certain events that seem to be taking place where other events can't take place. And there's lots of little things that then went, well, where are there other biases in community, in society, in business, in the workplace, in government? It really does open up a can of worms, so to speak. So just tell us, how did you get into this field in the first place?
I love that question because I love being able to share my story, because I think it's really important that people know that this is not just an academic exercise for me. In 2012, the Australian Federal Government reopened the offshore processing for asylum seekers on Nauru and Manus Island. And at that time, I was working with the Salvation Army as a Salvation Army officer. And when the email went round asking for volunteers to go to Nauru for 4 weeks, I put my hand up, not because I had this burning desire to work with refugees or to work in the tropics, but because I couldn't think of a reason why not to. And that decision literally changed the trajectory of my life, because on the very first day that I was there, we'd spent all day, we'd been up for over 24 hours by the time we'd flown out of Brisbane and over to Nauru. We'd had orientation, and the last thing that we needed to do was to go down into the camp where we'd be working for the next 4 weeks. And as I walked around with the group that I was assigned to, I started to get this physical response in my stomach where it started to turn over and churn a bit. And at that stage, I didn't know what it was. But as I reflected on that over the next few days, I realised that that actual physical reaction was telling me that I was afraid. Now, I actually wasn't afraid that the men, and they were all men at this stage, were physically going to hurt me. You know, they were people who were in trauma. But it was because they were different to me, like very different. I'd grown up in a very white, monocultural, Bible-based, conservative area of Sydney, had very little to do with people of other cultures. And here were 400 men who were different skin colour, different faiths, different races, different languages. And I was finding their difference threatening. And that was the first time I realised that I actually had a latent racism. You know, I'd been brought up to be kind and nice and polite to people, and I wouldn't have said I had a racist bone in my body. But because I was afraid, because they were different to me.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing, because from my history, what you feel is very common through community, and I suppose we've all had examples when it comes up to an election. I think certain political systems will prey on this in people's minds to create the fear and then provide the protection. It's become quite a manipulative tool, hasn't it?
Oh, it certainly has. And, you know, I don't know that we necessarily want the conversation to go along the direction of what we think about offshore processing. But my question always is, if these people who had come out on leaky boats were not brown-skinned people, would we have dealt with them differently?
Yeah.
And my answer, I believe, would be yes.
So this starts off your, you know, a thought in your mind about, you know, you've created that situation in the mind, and did you then start to think, well, where are other examples of bias in society? Is that what drove you?
Oh, yes. And because it was something that had impacted me strongly, and then another incident, still working on Nauru, but this time with the Nauruan people. Now, Nauru's a tiny little island. You can walk around it in 5 hours. It's tiny. And a lot of the people have never been off the island. But I sense this sense of superiority from the expats towards the Nauruans. You know, like, hello, we were university educated. We were from a first world country. And when I talked with the leader of the Salvation Army team for the, with the Nauruans there, she just said, yeah, look, we know that about you guys, but we just accept it. And that, again, was my second understanding about bias, was that I had a bias against people who were not educated the same way as I had, who came from a different community.
And Bronwyn, what it sounds like to me also, and I think it's marvellous that you're able to tell this story, is very much the fact that, you know, that physical reaction that you've had and then that personal reflection is also about you having a better understanding of white privilege.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I've never heard of white privilege.
Yeah, we were talking about white privilege a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you're aware of Peggy McIntosh's sort of metaphor, and she unpacks a knapsack for herself to highlight white privilege in our society and bias and institutionalized racism.
Yeah, look, it's one of the things that, and I'm quite a visual person, when I was unpacking white privilege for myself, I came across a little graphic that had like a stepped like in an auditorium, and the challenge was for you to throw a wadded up piece of paper and get it into the waste paper basket, and those who did could, you know, got some sort of reward. Of course, those people who were sitting in the front row all got it into the bin, whereas those who are sitting, you know, five rows back have much less opportunity to get their wadded paper into the bin. And that's what privilege does. We think, oh, we've all got the same job to do. We've all been given the same task of throwing our wadded paper into the bin, but it depends on where you start.
And that you're highlighting inequity, really, as opposed to inequality, because with equality, there's sort of the assumption that everyone starts off on the same footing, but with inequity, we know it doesn't.
Absolutely, yes. And I think one of the things that's important for white Australians to understand is that we do have this advantage, not that we've deserved it, but purely because of the colour of our skin. Mm. And it takes us a long time to see it. And I think it takes us a long time, once we've seen it, to understand the ramifications.
So let's look at some other forms of bias that's come out through COVID. And we mentioned that certain businesses are allowed to be open and others aren't. Certain events that are allowed to take place and others aren't. And certain people, seemingly, and one I remember most is, and I mentioned in an email, Kerry Stokes, who flew into Australia from United States straight into Perth, was allowed to go straight home. He then went back to the airport, flew to Sydney for a government event, no quarantine, and then flew back to Perth, no quarantine again. And it was probably just swept under the carpet because it was who he was, but it happened because he is who he is. And that sort of thing, I guess, happens more regularly than we see, but is still quite common.
And I think too, Rob and Bronwyn, we just heard, you know, just even driving to the studio this morning about the issues around Tony Abbott getting an exemption to travel to the UK for a meeting when there are so many people around the world that can't even be with their family or loved ones because they don't meet the exemption rules.
Yeah, I know. It's always that George Orwell, you know, all animals are equal and some are more equal than others. And that is bias in its essence, in that we favour one idea, one group of people over another, and often in detriment to the other people. Like, that's bias at its heart.
And there's obviously examples of workplace bias and gender bias. Have you, being a bias specialist, as you call yourself, is from that experience in Nauru sort of opened your mind to seek out more examples within our society?
Yes, and you mentioned earlier what COVID has done, and I can't but see bias almost everywhere at the moment, because COVID has allowed a lot of our biases, our prejudices, our judgments, our assumptions to really become very, very clear that we've been able to hide away under a veneer of civilization. And unfortunately, COVID is stripping some of that veneer away, and we're actually seeing things for what they really are that have always been there but not quite so clear.
Yeah. It's interesting, you've got a Salvation Army background, so I would presume that you have Christian beliefs and they are a sort of a base to your society drive. Is that sort of frustrated you a little about how that can be used or not used depending on who you are and where you are?
Oh, that's an open-ended question, isn't it? Yes, look, and I probably have, I could have quite a lot to say about some people in our leadership in our country.
But another day for that one, Bronwyn. It'll take a long time.
Yes, that would be. But I suppose what your question reminds me of is when I was working on Nauru, and yes, the Salvation Army is a Christian organisation, but we were under quite strict stipulations that we were not to favour Christians over any other faith, and my role was as the religious liaison officer, so my job was to ensure that the asylum seekers had their religious needs met, because it was recognised that if we meet people's faith needs, then their mental health is not at risk as much as it might be. And so I was actively working to support the needs of Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists, Zoroastrians, Catholics, other sorts of Christians, whole gamut of people. And I learned a lot about these faiths, and I realised where we see things the same, and there was much more about what we see things the same than what was different. But I worked with people in our team who had all of those faiths as well, and it was a wonderfully broadening experience. And this is one of the positives I see about being able to recognise our biases and then decide not to allow them to limit us, because our scope and our perspective opens up and we see so much more. And personally, I went from seeing difference as a threat to seeing it as an asset and seeing how I could work with people. And I don't think I could have done my job as well as I did on Nauru, except I'd actually had to confront those things within myself.
I'm glad you said that, Bronwyn, because I think as a society that what we try to do is we other people. It's called, you know, the concept of othering. And we try to look for how are we the same, but you're talking about embracing difference. And I think that's something from a global perspective that we all need to do.
It is. And I often talk with people in a business situation or a corporate situation. And there's been lots of studies done, particularly by groups like McKinsey, that have highlighted that if a business or a corporation expands their perspective, whether that's age, gender, race, actually their bottom line improves. It makes fiscal common sense to embrace diversity of thinking and perspective. And, you know, coming back to Rob, what you were saying earlier about how some people are allowed to do things and other people are not allowed to do things, I think if our governments could actually expand their perspective about who they're going to help rather than who, you know, we have to draw the line somewhere. I think if we expanded it, it probably wouldn't cost us a whole heap more anyway, and you've got more people on side. And that's got to help your bottom line politically, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yes, you would think so, and it might be too simplistic, and maybe that's our fault. We're looking at it far too simplistically. Let's go to other areas, things that have been in place pre-COVID, and we talk about gender bias, particularly in the workplace. I've certainly seen it firsthand myself, and I think we're more aware of it. But are we making progress?
I love to think that we are, and I think if I look back, yes, we are. You know, I've been around for quite a few decades now, and when I look back to my childhood and, you know, my mother in the early 1950s, when she got married, she and Dad got married, she had to leave work.
Yeah.
She was not allowed to be a married woman in the workplace. We've come a long way since the 1950s. And so, you know, that's just a little bit outside of my lifetime, but I can look back over my lifetime and think, gosh, we've come a long way. But I still see that we've got a long way to go. And sometimes I have my days where I go, oh, gosh, Are we still only here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah.
And there are. And I've just been reading something online this morning from someone who's probably two or three decades younger than myself, who is also in that despairing mode of going, are we still doing this? What about we had the Me Too movement, but nothing's changed? You know, and I think that sometimes people despair, but I do believe we've made progress and we just have to keep going.
Bronwyn, there's so many more things we could unpack, and with your permission, we'd love to have you back on in a week or two or three and talk about this a bit more. But I certainly love your passion for it. It's a conversation that needs to take place, and more people need to be aware of it. And I love your story about a life experience that changed your thinking, and hopefully more people can have it. And it's about talking about it. So let's talk about it some more, eh?
I would love to. Thank you so much.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. We'll be in touch to get you back in 3 or 4 weeks for some more chat.
Great. Thank you to you both.
Thank you, Bronwyn.
Bronwyn Williams, a bias specialist, Kerry, and it was a lot of unpack there, and there's so many more places we could go with some of that.
I know, but we could spend a whole day just talking about social justice and human rights issues, but don't get me started.
Don't get you started.